the dark days are done and the bright days are here. My sunny one shines so sincere. Sunny one so true. I love you.
Our next guest is one of those rare talents who has something to say and can say it funny. He's a writer-performer on the new Laugh-In and one of the most popular, outspoken, and entertaining personalities on the local news here in Los Angeles. He's won a half a dozen Emmys as a film critic and host of his own shows. Let's welcome Mr. John Barber, right over there.
Thank you. Hi, folks. This is John Barber. That was Sarita singing Sunny. And Frank Sinatra saying, here's Johnny, when he hosted The Tonight Show a number of years ago, and I was his first guest on that show. It is President's Day, a holiday. Wouldn't it be just wonderful if after the murder of John Kennedy, we could have had a long holiday from the majority of dreadful presidents the 1% inflicted on us in 1964? It is. So nice to be talking to you again, but sadly not so nice that I have to start off talking about our current shaky president, Donald Trump. Folks, from my meager experience, let me tell you that I have found that the two things that make people absolutely crazy are, one, the unsuccessful search for meaningful sex, and two, talking meaningless politics. Now, since meaningless politics is a tsunami in America now and easier to find, folks, I'm afraid, are getting crazier and crazier. When it comes to talking meaningless politics, since Trump's election, the media has every day once again shown how meaningless they are in America anymore. Instead of in-depth reporting on this harried president, all they report on is his popularity numbers. Folks, that is not reporting. That is scorekeeping. Trump himself says he feels a little uncomfortable in the White House. Well, he can join millions of others who look upon today as anti-President's Day. Now, you know, I hate to defend Trump, but honesty forces me to defend the truth. For days, the talking empty heads on television have been in a dither because Trump said, quote, the other day, the American media is the enemy of the American people, unquote. Well, if you look at the assassination of John Kennedy, Martin Luther King, Robert Kennedy, and the coverage or non-coverage of the fake wars of Vietnam and Iraq, Donald Trump is absolutely dead on. As Mark Twain said 100 years ago, the American media are and always have been just press agents for imperialism and permanent war. One of the emptiest heads now on television, sadly, is someone I once watched a lot, but now my stomach won't let me. That is Bill Maher. On his show last Friday night, this empty-headed idiot accused Trump of treason, calling his election the greatest scandal in American history, because Billy Boy says he colluded with the Russians to get elected. Maher is as unfamiliar with truth as he is with history. I was not in a voting booth, but I'm sure a lot of you were, and I bet not one of you heard someone voting next to you who spoke Russian. Americans voted for Donald Trump, not Russians. Bill Maher has mastered the new language of the American elite, gibberish. And for me, listening to him now is like having my ears waterboarded. I have on my wall a quote from a very famous nun, Sister Carita, who wrote a very controversial small book during the Vietnam War called To Believe in God. My favorite quote of Sister Caritas is this, quote, "To believe in God is to have the deep, abiding faith that somewhere, someone is not stupid." Sister Carita would become more of a believer and more in love with my guest. I'm fortunate to have him back for the second time, someone you loved and asked for often, someone who is truly, truly bright. If you go to his site, you can be informed and entertained for days watching his fabulous videos about Obama, Soros, 911, any subject. They are thrilling, plus scores of great books. My favorite, of course, being The Manufacturing of a President, How the CIA Shaped and Propelled Obama to the White House. My favorite investigative journalist, and evidently yours, Wayne Madsen. Wayne, welcome back to the show.
Hi, John. Good to be with you again.
Well, I must tell you, it is a thrill because for the last couple of days, I've been getting phone calls from my consigliere, Brian, who spent a couple of days with you in Dallas when we screened the film. He said, aside from seeing that film, he said the few days that he just spent with you were the most thrilling few days that he has ever spent. And he had a couple of things he wanted me to ask you about. But before I do that, what made you go to Washington? And how was it when you got back there since you moved to Tampa?
Well, I have to say that having lived in Washington since from 1982 till just about 4 years ago, and you know, seen presidents come and presidents go, and Congresses come and Congresses go, I've really never experienced anything like what I saw up there over a week and a half period. For example, the angst in Washington is absolutely palpable. You can feel it. It's just there's total confusion among those in the Congress and the media and the punditocracy. And of course, there's these talking heads on television who don't even give any impression how things actually are in Washington right now. And I have never seen anything like it. And I'll give you a couple anecdotes. I have never heard so much talk about a military coup, not fear of one, but hoping that one will happen.
Yes.
People that absolutely surprised me that they would even countenance a military coup. And I've also never heard so much open talk, not whispers about, you know, shall we say, executive action against the president. And anyone who saw the movie Executive Action about President Kennedy knows what I'm talking about.
Exactly.
But, you know, you couple that with the fact that there's been a purge at the Secret Service of presidential detail agents. There's purges going on at the National Security Council. There was this General Flynn resignation. As somebody said, well, what is it? Is it like Watergate? Now, having had, you know, I was pretty young then, but I said, not exactly like Watergate, but a little, say a mix between October 73, when Nixon, you know, had his Saturday night massacre.
Right.
He fired the Watergate special prosecutor and deputy attorney general resigned or fired, depending on who you believed. A mix between that and the movie 7 Days in May. I think that really sums up the way Washington is right now. And I'm not exaggerating this by any extent.
No, you absolutely are not. But you know what I don't quite understand about the purge? I could have understood in 1964, had there been a purge of the Secret Service and part of the intelligence apparatus when Lyndon Johnson became president.
Yeah. Hello?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Yes.
I don't understand the reason for the purges of the Secret Service and the intelligence agencies now.
Well, one of the reasons I think that there are purges is Trump is basically not, he doesn't trust a lot of the people. And we're talking about career people right now. We know that during the campaign, he kept his own private security people because he didn't trust Secret Service agents who were assigned to him. The same thing is happening now within the National Security Council. But I looking at the situation in Washington, what I gathered is there's now three Trump administrations. There's the inner circle administration. That's in addition to Trump. That would be his daughter and son-in-law, Ivanka and Jared Kushner. It also includes Steve Bannon, who's his chief strategist. It also includes Attorney General Sessions, who is very much part of that inner sanctum. And also Stephen Miller, who came from Sessions' staff in the Senate and who crafted the immigration executive order. So that is the most visible and ostensibly the most powerful part of the Trump administration. Then you have the second administration, which is really the establishment Republicans.
Right.
And that's Reince Priebus, the chief of staff, and the guy he brought over from the Republican National Committee, Sean Spicer, who was there, was also the press secretary there. These are the eyes and ears of Mitch McConnell, Paul Ryan, the speaker, and other top Republican leaders in the Congress. They represent the, formal Republican Party apparatus. And then you've got this third part of the Trump administration that if you look at who they are, it's not draining the swamp. These are the swamp. These are the swamp creatures. And they include Mike Pence, the vice president,
right.
Mattis, the defense secretary, Tillerson. We have to remember Tillerson, the Secretary of State, even though he's from Exxon, he is a friend of James Baker and the Bushes. He's a Texas Republican, and he's buddies with all those Republican Bush-type oil guys in Texas. And then you throw in there Pompeo over at the CIA, who is very much part of that whole infrastructure, having been with the Army on active duty. We have Dan Coats, who's the designate for Director of National Intelligence. He's an old-time Bush guy, former senator from Indiana, close friend of Pence. And then you look, they just went to this summit, in Security Summit Munich. And who are all these drain-the-swamp supposed Trump people rubbing shoulders with? George Soros, Evelyn Forrester de Rothschild, the heads of the EU, the heads of NATO, the NATO mafia, and all their people. So essentially, and all these Arab potentates who Trump railed against for giving money to the Clinton Foundation. The Saudis, the Kuwaitis, the Qataris, the Bahrainis, the Moroccans, they're all there rubbing shoulders with Pence and Mattis and also John McCain and Lindsey Graham.
Wayne, let me ask you this then. If Trump is cohabiting with these other swamp creatures, why is so much of the establishment, especially the intelligence establishment, so leery of him and so down on him?
Yeah, well, see, they would rather deal with Pence as president. There's no doubt about it. But they've got their own. See, this inner sanctum of Trump is really not, that's not the center of power. Visibly, it is. He's the guy riding. Of course, Trump's riding around in Air Force One. Trump is hosting the foreign heads of state, but the real agreements are being made by that third Trump administration of Mattis and Pence and Tillerson, who have just been in Europe assuring the Ukrainians that we'll come to their defense against Russia, assuring the European Union that we support the continuation of the Union and NATO and all their aggressive moves against Russia. It's business as usual, because these are the people, this third Trump presidency, is these are the people who have always been dealing with the global elites. And they were doing so in Munich. I mean, you look at that membership, the people who attended Munich, and you mentioned the media that's down on Trump, but look, you look there, and there's the Washington Post is present. CNN is there. You know, Christiane Amanpour, who's very connected, they're all there. They're all, you know, these are people who are socializing, having dinner and drinks together, and yet we're told that Trump is different than, maybe Trump is different, but his administration isn't really that much different.
I can understand his displeasure with bureaucrats, career bureaucrats in Washington. Years ago, when I interviewed Sergeant Shriver, I asked him what career bureaucrats thought of the president of the United States. And he said, John, without blinking, he said, they look upon him as an 8-year transitory civil servant. And I get the feeling that Trump has that feeling about a lot of the people he deals with and just wants to get rid of them. But why do you think there is such disruption in the country over his presidency? I mean, it's not just the intelligence community that is doing it and some of the media that's doing it. Do you think it's really the result of the groundswell from the people in the country who just hate seeing him in the White House?
Well, if you look at the Democrats, I think part of that may be the case. Now, obviously, the Democrats are a minority party now. They don't have control of anything, and they're looking to make gains in 2 years. But they, you know, in the Senate, it's really stacked against them. They're defending more seats in the Senate than the Republicans are, and because of gerrymandering, I don't think they have any real hope of taking back the House until the next census. And we don't know how they're going to gerrymander that even more to the favor of the Republicans. But the other thing I see is the confusion factor. A lot of it's coming from members of his own party, the Republicans. And we have to remember, you look at the people in the Trump White House. You got Bannon and Kellyanne Conway. They came from the Ted Cruz campaign. A lot of people don't know that. And of course, Cruz, you know, was lying Ted. And these two individuals were working for Cruz when Trump was calling him lying Ted. And so, you know, they represent not necessarily the views of Trump. They represent the views, I would say, more of like neocons. And you've got the neocons also trying to get into that third Trump presidency, too. I mean, they're trying every which way to worm their way into the State Department. We saw Elliot Abrams try to become the number two person at the State Department on Tillerson's recommendation. But Trump says, oh, Abrams, he criticized me. So Trump made a good decision in not accepting Abrams over there, who's one of the Iran-Contra felons, after all.
Well, we saw the successful infiltration of Hillary's campaign by these arch conservatives, neoconservatives.
Yeah.
And had she become president, they would have been running the country as they did during Bush. So yes. Speaking of Hillary, had Hillary become president, would we be hearing anything about Pizzagate? Now, this is a question. Brian Lloyd called me and told me just it was just thrilling spending time with you at the press club. And you were talking about Pizzagate. Now, I thought that thing was all dead and gone. Yeah. Is it?
Well, as far as I'm concerned, it was never a story, because having investigated a number of these pedophile scandals over the years, It lacked a lot of key evidence. First of all, no named victims. Second, no police investigation. Third, no filing of any civil suits. So it was all innuendo, hearsay. People said, "Well, this is called crowdsourcing journalism." I don't believe.
How did it gain such traction?
Well, it gained such traction, I believe, because people wanted to divert attention away from some issues that surround President Trump, and we just found out today how deep that goes. This guy Milo Yiannopoulos, who succeeded Steve Bannon on Bannon's recommendation as the new editor of Breitbart News, has now been disinvited from speaking at the Conservative Political Action Conference, CPAC, which is the end of this week, because two tapes have surfaced of him basically defending pedophilia, saying that, you know, he's absolutely opposed to the age of consent. He says there's nothing better than having a young boy experience sex with an older man so they know what it's all about. This is right out of the North American Man-Boy Love Association, a charter. And remember, Yiannopoulos was the guy who was disinvited from speaking at UC Berkeley, and Trump's threatened to cut off all federal funding to the University of California at Berkeley over that. Now, I think it defies logic that a guy like Steve Bannon did not know about these views held by Yiannopoulos before he put him in there as a successor of Breitbart News. So you look at some of these issues. See, Bannon is also, I know something about Bannon. Well, everybody knows he worked for the chief of naval operations, two of them, Admiral Hayward and Admiral Watkins in the early 80s. He was selected for the chief of naval operations staff as a lieutenant JG. I remember when I was in the Navy in Washington, full commanders were making coffee for the chief of naval operations. Okay. They were bringing him his coffee. And here a lieutenant JG, junior grade, is assigned to the CNO staff. Back when he was on the CNO staff, I know for a fact, because I was involved with the FBI and NCIS, NIS at the time, in investigating, amongst others, my own commanding officer was involved in a child pornography ring and pedophilia ring. And here we have Bannon sitting up there, selected like as a almost like a personal selection. And I do know for a fact that it was the chief of naval operations that covered that up, prevented the news media from doing any in-depth analysis or reporting on it, to the point that they actually ordered naval personnel with weapons to guard the area, the housing area, the base where I was in Oregon, that was the center of this activity.
Oh my God.
And here we got Bannon sitting up there. And Bannon, then for some reason, he gets out of the Navy as a lieutenant after 7 years. He was allowed to get his master's degree at Georgetown while he was on active duty. He then goes to Harvard Business School and then goes to work for Goldman Sachs. Eventually winds up out in California working in the movie and entertainment industry. And I just think that the fact that Bannon, who is this secretive, shadowy figure, people say he's Trump's Svengali, Trump's Rasputin. I just have a feeling there's a lot about Mr. Bannon we don't know, and if we found out, a lot of people who like Trump wouldn't be happy that he's sort of like Trump's major domo.
What is this fellow Yiannopoulos doing now, and why hasn't this story totally ended his career?
Well, he's of course now saying he was misquoted by his own quotes, which is something. Which I guess in the era of fake news, you know, he's trying to play off that. You know, after all, we've you know, as I tell people, never forget what never happened at Bowling Green, Atlanta, or now Sweden.
What is this with Sweden?
Well, of course, the other night, Trump at his rally in Melbourne, Florida, said, "Did you see what happened in Sweden last night?" You know, it's he was talking about the, I mean, like, you know, was there a terrorist attack in Sweden? And this comes after Kellyanne Conway talked about the massacre at Bowling Green, a terrorist attack there, which of course never occurred. And and Sean Spicer repeatedly mentioned the terrorist attack in Atlanta, and then said, "Oh well, I meant to say Orlando." Well, living in Tampa, 45 minutes from Orlando, there is a big difference. It's 45 minutes for me to drive to Orlando, but like 7 hours to drive to Atlanta. I think most people in the country know the difference between Orlando and Atlanta, except for the president's press secretary.
You know, it is astonishing to me the business of human nature is expressed by Americans. I mean, it is obvious to any idiot that the CIA and the government murdered John Kennedy and Martin Luther King and Robert Kennedy, and there is absolutely no outrage from either the media or the people. And yet, there is outrage over Donald Trump's presidency just because they don't find him as charming as that crook Bill Clinton. It is astonishing.
Right. Well, Bill Clinton, of course, look back and, you know, everybody said, well, he dodged the draft. He lied to the head of his ROTC unit. But what we also know is that when he was a Rhodes Scholar over at Oxford, he was actually working with the CIA and outing people who were attending communist youth summits in places like Moscow. So I guess you could say he did his service for the country, but it was covertly as a shill for the Central Intelligence Agency.
And so then he may have been aided into the presidency. I mean, your book about Obama is just absolutely amazing. And maybe the same was true with Clinton, that he was somehow ushered into the White House with the help of the CIA.
Well, we do know that William Casey, the CIA director under Reagan, did go to Little Rock and personally thank then Governor Bill Clinton for the assistance he rendered to the CIA in all those operations out of Mena, Arkansas, and apparently told Clinton, "I understand you've always wanted to be president, and because of what you did for us, you will become president."
How do you think they recruited Barack Obama?
Well, I think he had all the necessary credentials. He actually is, you know, you've heard the term military brat. He's a CIA brat. His mother was obviously working with the agency in Indonesia. His Kenyan father's Barack Sr. came over on a scholarship to the University of Hawaii, and he was taking Russian along with Obama's mother in 1960. I mean, when in fact, in those days, Hawaii was one big, huge military base. So the only people who would be taking Russian then would most likely be people affiliated with the military or U.S. intelligence. Then his Indonesian stepfather, Lolo Sitorou, assisted General Suharto in the CIA coup in 1965 that overthrew President Sukarno. And of course, that whole bloody time frame was popularized by the Mel Gibson Sigourney Weaver movie, The Year of Living Dangerously.
Great
film. And then you look at the grandparents, Stanley Armour Dunham, said he was a furniture salesman. I mean, if you believe that, you know, I mean, here he's traveling around or being transferred from place to place, ostensibly working in furniture stores. And the last one he was supposedly at in Hawaii never actually existed, except in corporate records. There was no, brick and mortar furniture store called Pratt's in Honolulu. That's because he was working at the CIA station in Honolulu. And his grandmother, Madeline Payne Dunham, the first female vice president of the Bank of Hawaii, of course, was running the escrow accounts that the CIA used to pay off their client dictators like Suharto in Indonesia and Chiang Kai-shek in Taiwan and Marcos in the Philippines, to name but a few.
Well, it is just astonishing. I remember when he spoke at the Democratic Convention a dozen years ago from out of nowhere, and it was, I must say, it was an absolutely brilliant speech, and that which launched him on his way. Now, as the case with Donald Trump, Fletcher Prouty has often said and quoted John Kennedy as saying after he fired Alan Dulles that he was going to blow the CIA into 1,000 pieces and blow it to the wind. Do you think the Central Intelligence Agency is worried at all about how Donald Trump is going to be handling them?
I don't think so, because I would just note that, you know, he put this guy Mike Pompeo over there. Now, Pompeo is a sort of a Tea Party congressman from Kansas. He's also a creationist. He believes the Earth is only, I guess, what, 6 or 9,000 years old.
Round or flat.
Yeah. I don't know. I would imagine the CIA has convinced him that the Earth is round, but maybe that's as far as it's going with him. But Pompeo is over there basically to do what he's told by the CIA. That's why Trump has basically been forced to name Dan Coats as the director of national intelligence. But we do know that rather than Coats attending National Security Council meetings, we know that the DNI has been disinvited. Bannon's been put on the National Security Council, and apparently Pompeo will be there, which I don't know how that works, because Pompeo's supposed to be under the DNI, Director of National Intelligence, yet his boss is supposedly not invited to the National Security Council meetings. That's just part of this confusion I talked about earlier in Washington. Nobody really knows what's going on.
How is it, Wayne, that so many born-again idiots have risen to such high prominence in the American government when there's supposed to be this separation of church and state?
Well, there are a lot of reasons for that. And one we just saw not long ago where Trump spoke at the National Prayer Breakfast meeting, that's actually not sponsored by the White House. That's sponsored by a shadowy born-again Christian group called the Fellowship, also known as the Family. These are the people that put the word Christ in CIA, you know, or as people will call it, Christians in Action. This is where Trump said, let's pray for Arnold Schwarzenegger's flagging ratings with The Apprentice. But this is really the group that sponsors a lot of these born again activities. If you sat in that breakfast, you'd see the president there, but you'd also see a lot of members of Congress from all religions, Christian, Jewish, and probably Muslims too, because you also see a lot of foreign heads of state and heads of government, including from Muslim countries and Asia, Buddhist countries. So this is, you know, they just use Christ as a logo like McDonald's uses Ronald McDonald. This is a huge tax dodge and a huge covert operation to peddle influence. So that's how they get a lot of power. You look at who was involved in creating this group, the fellowship that sponsors this thing, the National Prayer Breakfast. Well, you see all the people. I mean, Billy Graham, Pat Robertson, Jerry Falwell. I mean, all the usual suspects are involved, including the late Sung Myung Moon, the head of the Unification Church.
Wayne, as somebody who spent a lifetime in Washington in all kinds of capacities, somebody as bright as concerned as yourself, I cannot see how it's possible you can be hopeful about the future of this country.
Right now I used to think, well, the country will remember. People remember Watergate, and of course remember what they said. Well, Nixon resigned before he was actually on trial in the Senate. And that shows that the system works. Remember, our system, constitutional system works. I don't think it does now.
It doesn't at all.
No. And you know, that's why I think I believe one of the reasons I was hearing military coup and other extreme actions in Washington. And like I say, quite open, you know, used to be where people would say such things. I think they worry about getting a knock on the door from the Secret Service, you know, but now we see people in the Secret Service being purged, maybe for, well, we had that one agent in Colorado, of course, who said she wouldn't take a bullet for Trump, and she, I guess, was fired. I have to think there's other agents that are saying the same thing.
Absolutely. Wayne, I want to thank you again so, so much for being here. I love going to your site. I love watching your stuff. Where can people get your books? Where can they watch these wonderful videos?
Yes, well, my website is WayneMatsonReport.com. The books are available there. Also, they're available through Amazon, Books A Million, BarnesandNoble.com, et cetera. And everything is basically available through the website.
Well, again, Wayne, thank you. Thank you so much for being here. You're just absolutely, you're one of the lights at the end of the tunnel.
Well, good to be with you, John, and hope to be talking to you again soon.
Oh, you will be talking to me soon and often. We'll be right back, folks, with the inimitable Joe Satilli. We'll be right back.
Great music from all the greatest performers from sunup to sundown.
How do you keep the music playing?
Then, great talk all night. The mysteries of UFOs, conspiracy theories, and the true story of Las Vegas that has never been told.
There are three ways to listen to KIYQ. Go to the TuneIn app, just search for KIYQ, or go to www.kiyq.org. Listen from any telephone, call 605-477-2857. That's 605-477-2857. Long distance charges may apply.
KIYQ 107.1.
This is John Barber of John Barber's World every other Monday at 5 p.m. Pacific right here on VBS Radio. I'm telling you about a terrific show, The New Criminal Minds, with outstanding actor Gary Sinise, called Criminal Minds Beyond Borders, a tough drama about a special unit of the FBI involved in protecting Americans who are beyond borders. It follows the regular Criminal Minds, airing every Wednesday at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 Central. Don't miss it. Gary Sinise is outstanding.
Hi, I'm Richard Belzer. This is the great BBS Radio.
Thank you for that smile upon your face. Oh, sunny.
Hi, this is John Barber. You may remember me as the co-host, producer, and creator of Real People, America's first reality show, or most recently as the writer-director of what's been called the definitive documentary on JFK's murder, The Last Word on the Assassination. Now I'm doing a show every other Monday from 5 to 6 Pacific Time on BBS. You'll hear provocative views, unreported news, and film reviews from me, with outstanding guests and you. Join me on John Barber's World.
You're listening to BBS Radio. If it's not mainstream, it's on bbsradio.com.
Those of you who have an ongoing interest in the JFK assassination might want to know about this. TV producer John Barber. He put together a dream team of JFK researchers, including Coast regular Jim Mars and world-class JFK writers Dick Russell and Joan Mellon. They all got together at UNLV in front of a live audience. They had a screening of Barber's terrific and I'd say historic film based on interviews with prosecutor Jim Garrison of New Orleans. And then after the film was shown, the experts all talked about the latest JFK theories and evidence. It's now out on a DVD. Terrific stuff. I'm George Knapp, Coast to Coast AM.
Welcome back to John Barber's World. I'm right here right now with my cohort and sidekick and with somebody without whom I could never do this show and without whom I could never learn some of the stuff I know, the creator and author of News Vandal, Joe Satilli. Joe, welcome back to the show.
Good to be with you, John. And look, I have to admit, it's been a long, hard slog. The campaign is essentially has been going on for 2 years. He held a rally at Friday. This is the famous now Swedish terror attack, whatever thing, the Swedish meatball of confusion that he has sown. That was called a campaign rally. And they are actually already starting to raise money for his 2020 run. So it feels like I've been doing this one story for 2 years because I've been doing this one story for 2 years. I have to say, though, on another level, I'm like a kid in a candy store. I've been kind of, you know, my graduate degree in history is studying fascism and populist movements of the 19th and 20th century. This is what I've been training for. So what the hell? I mean, come on. The emperor has no clothing. The empire has no clothes. Stand around and gawk at it.
I always said this about Nixon. If the emperor has no clothes, he should be arrested for indecent exposure.
Yeah, that's right.
So there you go.
And now, there is the exposure here is so indecent.
Okay. As far as being in a candy store, be careful of overloading and getting diabetes because
I'm a type 2 candidate all the way.
I love your News Vandal, and I would say about more than 70% of all the great stories you had today were about the Donald. All fabulous stories, by the way. So where do you want to start? Do you want to expand on something that Wayne said earlier?
No, well, there are a couple of things. One, I think it's really, really interesting that Michael Flynn gone. Then over the weekend, there were insiders saying John Bolton, the neoconservative's neoconservative. I mean, he's actually makes neoconservatives look like Adlai Stevenson kind of neoconservative, right? So there was some thought that he was going to get the spot that Flynn vacated. Well, that didn't happen. And today, in a very odd little mini press conference, sitting on like a Louis XIV style duvet or whatever. What is it? What are they called? It's not a couch. It's a divan, right?
Yeah.
Sitting on one of these things with McMaster and this guy Kellogg, Trump says H.R. McMaster, Lieutenant General, is going to be his national security advisor. Now he's at Mar-a-Lago. United States government, i.e. taxpayers, have paid as much to move Trump's family around, particularly back and forth to Mar-a-Lago, in 1 month as they paid for 1 year of travel for the Obama family. So we're paying for it, folks. But so this appointment is a guy who I've spent a lot of time researching him over the last 3 or 4 hours. I watched a couple of his 2-hour presentations at the Carnegie Mellon Foundation and whatnot. He believes that Russia is involved in an asymmetric war with the United States to undermine the post-World War II order and to create an advantageous relationship with Europe so that it can expand its imperial aims. So in other words, this is the anti-Flynn. So whatever we've seen, you know, you've got Mad Dog Mattis going around the world reassuring allies saying we're not going to take the oil. You've got Mike Pence saying, hey, Ukraine, hey, Europe, we're all for NATO. We just want you to pay your fair share, which, oh, by the way, Obama spent 4 years, the last 4 years of his presidency, saying that Europe is not paying its fair share. So isn't it funny, after all this hoo-ha, guess where we've come back to? We've come back to where the establishment always was. In the meantime, Donald Trump is kind of like, and your great friend, the brilliant Gino Minari, would understand this. I'm starting to get the impression that Donald Trump is the busty assistant in pasties off to the side, and the magician is standing there taking billion-dollar rabbits out of a bag and putting them in a hat.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Looking at this busty assistant, all of a sudden we're going to look at the magician, and he's going to pull these billion-dollar rabbits out of his hat, and everybody's going to go, how did he do that? Because what he's doing is he's turning over the entire government to billionaires and to the same old financial and corporate interests who have always controlled it. It's like he's the ultimate Trojan horse.
Well, if that's the case, he would have the extreme strong support of the media, which he does not seem to have, unless that is all fake. And if that is the case, why aren't things a little more peaceful in the country?
Well, I think there are a couple things going on. One is, I think he is in retreat. He was capitulating in a number of ways. I think the one thing that really kind of sums it up is that, you know, he spent a lot of time in his campaign going on China, 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 right? Well, that's a misdirection as far as I'm concerned. He's taking people, particularly in the Rust Belt, people who have lost their jobs, and saying, you lost your way of life because the Chinese took it from you. Those wily Chinese, they came and snatched it away. And so that's a wonderful little misdirection when really the people who snatched it away are some of the people who sit in his are sitting in his administration. But more importantly, he then went on to say before he was fully inaugurated, well, why don't we just open up the one China policy? Why can't we do stuff? Why can't we renegotiate Taiwan? Well, you can't do that because I know from talking to colonels when I was a defense policy analyst, there is no way the United States can protect Taiwan. We can't do it. If China really wanted to invade Taiwan, they could do it in about 14 days and have Taiwan defeated, and we couldn't stop them. So what's the agreement we've come up with? Well, we won't recognize Taiwan, and you won't invade it, and we will all pretend like it's an actual policy, and we will go our way, and we'll make all of our money off of widgets that we sell in Walmart. Well, what does he have to do? Well, about 10 days ago now, he sends a note to President Xi to kind of apologizing, and President Xi does nothing. Within 8 hours later, he gets on the phone and says, oh, President Xi, got to tell you, one China policy, tremendous, greatest policy ever, always loved it, always for it. So what that is a capitulation in a geopolitical sense that really pisses away a lot of America's leverage in Asia. And those are the things, along with Michael Flynn coming up into Sean Spicer's press conference about 11 days ago and saying, we're putting Iran on notice. Well, you know what the Pentagon said? Oh, you're putting Iran on notice? Does that mean you and Donald Trump and Steve Bannon are going to get in a ship and go into the Persian Gulf and make sure that the Iranians don't shut down the Strait of Hormuz? Because I could tell you this, we don't want to go to war with Iran because we can't go to war with Iran because we militarily can't do it. So if you yahoos want to get into a boat and grab a gun and go fight Iran, have at it. We can't do it. So I think what's happening is all of his bluster has come up against hard realities, particularly inside the Pentagon and the national security state, because they can't have hot wars in Southeast Asia and in the South China Sea. They can't have hot wars with Iran.
As far as Iran is concerned, it is startling to me that the most sense is being spoken by the American military.
But think about it, John. Does anybody, you know this better than anybody, do you think that they're outside of the yahoos who have been purged? And one of the guys who was purged was Flynn. Flynn was pushed out of the national security state because he was considered to be unstable and to be basically sort of a strange Lovian kind of character. Kellogg is another one of these guys. McMaster is not. So, you know, if you're in the Pentagon and you're a general, do you want to be the next Westmoreland?
No.
These guys don't want to be the next Westmoreland. And it's funny, this guy McMaster wrote a book called Dereliction of Duty about how the brass in the Pentagon and Vietnam abrogated their duty to tell the civilian leadership, and particularly LBJ, the truth about what was going on in Vietnam and how they actually helped to create the mess in Vietnam by their unwillingness to come up with, to show the cold hard facts of how Vietnam was going wrong. And that's how this guy McMaster made his name. So I think that it's not coincidental that you have a guy who made his ended up getting a PhD on a thesis that you cannot go into a war with Fantasyland ideas about winning the war, because the hard realities are the body bags come back. And I can tell you,
the question that I would pose to you is this: there are headlines for days and days about Trump saying he's putting Iran on notice.
Yep. Yep.
Why did not the media report the opposite of what the Pentagon was saying, that, hey, this is the wrong idea?
Well, because you know how these things work, John. They have to work in back channels. So all of this talk we've heard about the deep state, the deep state, the deep state, I don't think this is the deep state. This is kind of the shallow state. These are the people – these aren't the people who are on the back nine, you know, golfing with Boeing and golfing with high-powered law firms from Wall Street, and they're all saying, ah, yes, well, we'll make a killing off of this fun little war we want to do in Libya. It's not that. That's not what's operating here. These are the people who have their heads in the on the chopping block for the decisions that get made by the incoming political leadership. And when they looked at Bannon and Flynn and Trump and said, these guys want to start a civilizational struggle with Islam and they want Iran to be ground zero, we ain't having it. And oh, by the way, it's all like a big fiction. Even Bibi Netanyahu, he likes to rattle the saber about Iran. The chief of staff, the whole military leadership of the Israeli army, the IDF, has endorsed the Iran nuclear deal, saying that it has ensured Israeli security. But for political reasons, Netanyahu rattles the saber about Iran because it raises him money from people here in the United States. It gets him support in the Congress among those sort of wackadoodle evangelicals who want the Al-Aqsa Mosque to be torn down so that it's a landing pad for Jesus to take them home. And it also allows him to create coalition governments with hard right wingers inside Israel, because otherwise he would not be able to put together a coalition government. So it's all for politics. It's just pure politics. Whereas for Flynn and Bannon, and I think they convinced Trump in many ways, this was about saving Western civilization from this looming existential evil. And I think that people inside the national security state said, that's not a fight that we want.
Since Trump has become president, I have not heard once from him or any of his supporters how we're going to make America great again.
No.
It was a campaign slogan. And I must tell you, quite honestly, I can never remember a time when America was great. There was always it was always a yin and yang country.
Right.
It was always a Jekyll and Hyde country. But I do remember this as a kid. Financially, at one time, and employment-wise, it was great. When I first came to this country, I could get fired from a job five times a day and have five more jobs the same day.
Right.
A husband and a father could work at one job for 20 or 25 years, have two or three kids, his wife would not have to work, and they would be fine. That no longer exists. That seems to me the only time America was close to great, because it was a family unit then. It was a major community in the 30s and the 40s. That community has absolutely and totally disappeared. America no longer is a country with a sense of community or even a sense of purpose.
Well, and John, you were at ground zero of that kind of thing. You know, I was watching a little something over the weekend, and you start thinking about the last episode of MASH had a 74 share.
Yes.
You're real people. Didn't you guys have like a 50 share at one point?
All the time.
Okay. Tell the people what a 50 share is.
A 50 share is half of everyone in America watching television was watching real people.
Real people.
We had that more constantly every week than any show in the history of television. Now, of course, shows like MASH and All in the Family and a few of those shows, when they were going off or showing their last episode, they would get a 70
or 74 share.
And justifiably so. Right. But all the time, it was a 50 share for
so,
real people.
So, John, what does that mean? That means that every night, a huge portion of the American people came around the television and, in a way, communed around the same ideas and the same things being communicated, the same stories, the same sensibilities. That's gone. We are so fragmented now. We are so caught up in our own bubbles. We retreat to what is comfortable and safe, because in some ways, even when the media was in many ways co-opted, and this is why we think about things as being the golden age, when I could say the golden age of journalism was not really what we think it is, because I think now is the golden age of journalism, because it's almost impossible to hide anything, whereas in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, we think it's the golden age of journalism, but it's actually easy to hide something. But what we had then was a sense of community. But I'll tell you the thing we had more than anything is we had a common enemy in the USSR. And that's was the bottom line that united Americans. Remember, politics ended at the water's edge, and that doesn't happen anymore. And unfortunately, we seem to be a country that almost needs a common enemy to find common values.
Well, we shouldn't need a common
enemy. We shouldn't need it, but that's unfortunately how we were forged in the Cold War, and I think we still have not figured out who the hell we are in the wake of the Cold War.
No, we haven't. First of all, the Cold War, and Garrison points it out very, very effectively in the American media in the second assassination of President John F. Kennedy, that the CIA was formed in 1947, signed into law by Truman, something that he lived to regret. On his deathbed, he said it was the worst thing that he had ever done, is because the CIA needed to control American foreign policy. They needed to create a fake Cold War. And Garrison points out that the Soviet Union lost 25 million people.
25 million.
They were in no position ever to be a threat to America. It was all a fraud. It was an absolute total fraud, and America has been living that fraud ever since. Can you imagine what would happen to this country if we slashed the military budget by 90%?
A lot of people would be out of work, John. A lot of people.
We would be going broke. We'd be a second banana republic. That's what we would be. It is all fake. America is a fake democracy. America is a fake economy. It's a fake everything, for crying out loud. So I wonder how guys like you and guys like Wayne, who look into this stuff every day, and of course it's a golden age of journalism, except the gold never gets to glitter in mainstream media. We never hear the great stuff that you uncover or Wayne uncovers. We have to find it on the internet. Thank God for the internet.
True enough. Well, John, I know we got to go. So thank you for having me on once again. It's always a pleasure. I cannot wait for the second assassination to come out, and everybody's going to be blown away by it. And as ever, my friend, cheers to you.
Well, thanks so much, Joe. And tell us again when you're going to be on a Celli show again.
Celli tomorrow, AFR Radio, and then crew. Just go to newsvandal.com. You can find it all there. And thanks again, John.
Thank you so much, Joe. The best of health to you. Thank you all for listening. Good night. Good luck. And I want to thank Mike Kim, my producer, without whom I would never do this show. You all have a wonderful night. Talk to you in 2 weeks. Bye-bye.
You're my spark of nature's fire. You're my sweet, complete desire. A sunny, 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 sunny.